It's time for Cofield and Company. Live at the Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar, inside Treasure Island, it's Cofield and Company.
Yeah! All right, here we go. Friday. Adam Hill did not even budge. He's used to it. He's working. He's texting. He's researching. We got 3 hours on the way, live in Phoenix at the Final Four. We're also stationed at our Friday home, Treasure Island, Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar. You doing okay?
Good.
Okay. A lot of good conversations today, including Kevin Kruger, which we'll play parts of it here in about 5 minutes. Got into the transfer portal, got into the roster, got into maybe some rule changes that will potentially regulate what's going on around the transfer portal. But along with the coach conversations, we want to break down what's going on in the games tomorrow, the men's games. We have men's game, or check that, women's games coming up tonight. But let's go over to Treasure Island, and Greg Salerno is on the scene. Greg, what's going on, buddy?
How you doing, man? Pretty good over here, dude. Golden Circle's nice. That's the first time I've been here, too. So.
Right? It's sweet. I know. We're getting you out to all the hot places. Memorabilia there is sick. Mr. Ruffin has just an unbelievable collection. 55-plus TVs. You got the sports book down there as well. So I got to get your take on one of the basketball stories of the day. We started to hit on this yesterday a little bit. I think it's massive with Bronny James, who had health issues, didn't have a great year, certainly was a bit overhyped, and I'll blame some of the issues with the health, but it looks like he is now officially in the transfer portal, according to Woj, but he's also going to consider the NBA. What do you think? Have you followed the story? Because LeBron did make statements over time that, hey, man, this kid could actually contribute in the NBA now.
Yeah, well, I'm not usually a conspiracy theorist, and I am a big LeBron fan on the court, but this to me has like LeBron's fingerprints all over it, because just he's for years now he's been saying he always wanted to play his last year with his son. He's been hinting all of a sudden this year now with this like I don't have much time left thing, and you know, after the games, and who knows how long I'm going to be playing and all this stuff. And now maybe he realizes Bronny's not going to have the career he thought he was going to have, you know, and this might be the only shot he has to play with his son, which is what he wanted to do. And suddenly now he pulls out of USC and he might enter the draft. I don't know. That's my theory. I don't know what you guys think, but I feel like it's LeBron kind of, you know, thinking it as their last chance to do what he wanted to do.
Yeah, and I don't think Bronny will go to the NBA. I think he will stay in the portal and go somewhere else, or potentially even go back to USC. But really no idea. I mean, as Greg is saying, I think there's a chance that this is – hey, it's going to be LeBron's last year. Let's figure out how to get him in the NBA and where to go. And maybe the Lakers, you know, just use a draft pick on him, which would be pretty crazy because I don't think he's going to get picked. Maybe some other team takes him and tries to orchestrate a trade with LeBron. I don't know. LeBron has altered his saying that he wants to play with him to, I want to play on the same court with him. Maybe being,
oh, really?
I'll play in a different team. There's a lot of moving pieces. I just hope Bronny makes the decision for himself.
Well, here's the problem. Is that, and this is what I believe the whole time, is that LeBron would close out his career with Bronny on the same team, but LeBron would have to go somewhere else. And the incentive to pick Bronny James is to get LeBron in his final years and the marketing might. So if LeBron's going to walk after this year or next year, that kind of blows up. If LeBron is not guaranteed to be with Bronny, then Bronny can't go to the NBA.
Right.
Keep going, Greg.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, I don't know, man. I feel like, because, again, I feel like LeBron is very calculated, as much as, you know, again, I like the guy. He's very calculated, and it just all fits together for me. And I feel like he knows, because if he thought Bronny was going to be, you know, better than he is, or if he thought Bronny was going to be, he would have more time. You know what I mean? I feel like. So I just feel like this is his last shot to do it. And if he's going to leave I don't know if he would leave the Lakers, but maybe this is his, you know, leaning on Pelinka, like, hey, you told me you'd draft my son if I stayed, whatever. I don't know. You know, something like that. But I just feel like it's LeBron trying to manipulate the situation. But, I mean, you know, you could totally be right. I have no idea.
I mean, it could just be, hey, the Lakers are okay and not great. He's looking at it like the losing is kind of frustrating. I don't think I'm going to win a championship. Like, how long am I going to stretch out this NBA career if I'm not having fun?
Right. Yeah, totally. Again, that would be another reason to do it. So.
Yeah. All right, Greg, we'll check in with you midway point of the show. Appreciate you manning the set down at TI Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar. Remember, one of the most important things, especially on the Strip, free parking. Self-parking in the back is free, right? It's great.
All right, thanks, guys. Appreciate you.
There you go. Greg Salerno. We got Women's Final Four coming up at 4 o'clock with NC State and South Carolina, and then the big ratings getter tonight will be Caitlin Clark and the Iowa squad going against UConn and Geno. But this might be a night that I root for Geno to come up with something. Paige Beckers, junk defenses, trapping. Get the ball out of Caitlin Clark's hands.
Yeah, I think there's obviously a Las Vegas-related story around this today with the Aces, too. So there's a lot of hype around Caitlin Clark. There's no question about it. People are excited.
For you, does the Final Four, and especially the coaches' convention, I don't think people – we talk about it every year, but I don't think people realize that the coaches' convention is every year in the Final Four city. And there are rules to discuss. This may be the most important year in terms of trying to change some rules. We both love the transfer portal, but there are some tweaks that need to be made. I wonder if coaches have a different mood as they come here. They can't be as happy-go-lucky because you're trying to manage all this stuff with the portal, like who's on my team, who's not. It's crazy.
Yeah, I think we've seen it. Yeah, I've tried to ask a few coaches about it on the air, but you know, they're just kind of saying they're going about their business. It's what you got to do. But I think you see it even around the hotel. It's not as much mingling. There are guys that are working, and there's guys that are, you know, checking texts and emails and all those things. They can't just relax and have a good weekend.
UNLV coach Kevin Kruger sat in with us a little earlier in the day, and we got into that topic. I remember years past, Dave Rice had come in here, you know, get a chance to, you know, exhale. So much pressure on him in the Run Rebel days as the head coach, and talked to Kevin Kruger about the fact that, you know, everyone's kind of on pins and needles now, and this is no longer a time to chill.
Yeah, it's worse. And, I mean, and I drove all the way down here from Vegas just to do this interview with you guys.
Right.
I'm driving home right after. No, okay. No, but it's – I mean, yeah, we could sit and discuss all the things that need to be changed. But the way we look at it as a staff and the way we try to kind of paint a better picture is it's kind of become our new fall. You know, where the fall used to be before the transfer portal, the fall was very stressful because of dates, visits, kids start committing, who's next. I mean, you had to do all of that, and it had to happen very quickly. Now it's just kind of flipped on its head a little bit, and we're running around with no direction in the spring.
Is there an appetite for changes to happen, like among coaches? Is there talk like, hey, we need to figure out different ways to do this or a different system for this? Or is it like, hey, this is what it is, we have to adjust to it?
Yeah, I don't know how many head coaches you've had on. Hopefully you ask them all that question because, I mean, this is things need to change. And we're not talking about, like, you know, moving the moon. But, you know, the portal has got to be addressed.
Yeah.
The dates of the portal have to be addressed. Obviously, NIL is going to be addressed, although we're still learning so much about it. I don't really know until we have another 2, 3, 5 years to where we can really start implementing things. I think we're just wasting our time. We need to learn more about the NIL, I think, before we start trying to change things. But the little things like the portal window, and I'm really hoping we have a head coaches meeting here at 10:30. I'm hoping that some of, and I'm not putting it on the older coaches, but I'm hoping there's some ideas that maybe some of us younger coaches can help push, you know, because we don't carry the weight. You know, we don't carry enough weight, but the things that we could get behind and start making changes, because while the student athletes should have control over their lives, there's no question about that. Nobody's arguing any differently. The little things that we think that could provide maybe even just an ounce more of comfort or security in our profession that I think we're missing on, hopefully we can get those done and get things like that moving so that everybody can be happy.
I'll say
as happy as possible.
Yeah, I'll say right off the bat, I mean, the fact that the portal was open when games are being played seemed very silly to me. Like, how is that a thing?
Well, when we let agents in legally, you know, when we opened the door to agents, now the discussions become, those areas become very gray, because when is that an individual associated with the prospect? If it's just a guy calling on somebody's behalf, because a lot of guys don't have agents, remember, because they don't want to give part of that money to an agent just for reading a contract.
Sure.
You know, so a lot of guys don't have quote-unquote representation. They still don't feel that they need it. Some guys do. I'm not saying right or wrong either direction, but in my opinion, I just threw it out to Steve, I think you should have 7 days from the completion of your season, even if people are playing, to decide whether or not you want to leave. Once those 7 days are up, though, you can go in and be in there as long as you want, but once those 7 days are up, the university could know your intentions.
Right.
You know, so if you want to go test the open market, which is what we've created, free agency.
Yeah, yeah.
If you want to go test that, that at least is, it's mandatory. Instead of now, we have an entire month of April where, and I love our guys. I don't think they're doing it to us. But we hear stories.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
Where people are just going to be held hostage for a month. And so I think there's little things that, because a lot of kids are in the portal, whether they say it or not.
Right. Yes. I don't necessarily want to talk about the kid directly, obviously, but we had a kid on yesterday, and we were asking him about, he stayed at his school his whole career, was a very, very good player, never went in the portal, just said, hey, I'm gonna finish school here. And he was saying, he's like, yeah, people are reaching out. Like, they were talking to me behind the scenes. They weren't talking to me directly, but they were talking to other people to talk to me. And like, that stuff's just not fair to programs and to kids, I feel like. I mean, those things are going to happen, I guess, but it just doesn't seem fair to programs that are trying to keep kids around and for kids that are trying to make their own decisions, like all these people trying to influence them.
Yeah, it's the ugliest part of our sport right now. However, it's our fault. Like,
right.
That is not the kid's fault. I mean,
yeah.
if your financial advisor told you, don't go in the portal and see how much money you could get every spring, right, then they're not doing their job.
Yeah.
Their job is to help you get as much money as you can. So we've created this.
Yeah.
With no penalty of leaving, no penalty of changing. I'm curious to see, maybe the Mountain West will be the first that we'll look around the room and say, you don't touch another Mountain West kid. I don't know. And that's just, some, you know, if you don't, you can't go within conference. We're going to have I don't know. And I don't even know if that's the answer.
Right.
But just something along the line. But until there's a deterrence for going in the portal, why wouldn't you?
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
So we got a lot of UNLV basketball to talk about, but very important before we do that is what's going on. You know, obviously your dad is, you know, intertwined in coaches versus cancer, and you go up on the web, folks, the coaches.cancer.org, and Kevin Kruger's with us, the head coach at UNLV. Let's talk about spreading the message, first of all, because if people haven't heard it before, it's a really important message.
Yeah, and you know, we talk about just the progress that's been made, you know, because I remember as a kid, and I know you guys do, I'm not saying you're older than me, but like, you know, it was a borderline death wish, right? It was a death sentence. You learned of cancer, your family members learned of cancer, and there wasn't a lot of hope, not nearly to the degree today. But I think what we've kind of created also is that we've got to continue to work to bring awareness, because cancer isn't beaten, right? You're more likely in a lot of areas to be able to beat cancer now, but it's not beaten. You know, we have got to keep going. We've got to keep pushing. We've got to keep getting awareness, raising money so that we can kind of stay out in front in a lot of areas while still making progress in others. So teaming up with the American Cancer Society, you know, Coaches vs. Cancer, it's just become kind of a fabric in my opinion, and a lot of the people, a lot of the coaches, lives, just it's just become kind of a part of coaching, is being a part of Coaches vs. Cancer.
You've done great work in this, a lot of coaches have as well, but what has it been like for you to see your dad is about it? Like, there's a lot of people that are involved in causes and, you know, say like, hey, I'm gonna be a spokesperson or whatever. Like, your dad is about it, and it's incredible to watch it. What has it been like for you to kind of see him and the path that he set in terms of, you know, being involved in something like this?
Well, yeah, I mean, he just set so many great examples in a lot of areas of life for me that, you know, I always talk, when people always talk about him, it's very easy for me to say, well, he's just consistent. You know, if you have three conversations with him, you don't have to ask his opinion on things, you know, whether or not he's going to like or dislike something, because, you know, he's level and he's consistent. And, you know, I think this is another great example that, you know, I remember him being on the phone as long as I can remember, growing up in the house, during season, off season, whatever, talking about coaches versus cancer and what can be done. You know, starting is the Golf Classic in Vegas. I think it's been 15-ish, 17-ish years now. You know, just working really hard on getting people there, raising money. But he set an unbelievable example that he's going to work really hard at that, just like he did at coaching, just like he did at, you know, being a parent. He's really been incredible in helping continue that going forward.
Get the information on the web, coaches.cancer.org. Golf tournament is in the third week of May. That'll be in Las Vegas. Stick around. On the way back with Kevin Kruger, we're going to get into the roster reconstruct and how's it looking. I don't know that we can mention specific names, but with the portal, that's coming up with Kevin Kruger.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Back here, Radio Row, Cofield, Adam Hill, and Kevin Kruger, head coach of UNLV, is sitting down with us. So, the portal is very interesting. I made a list of like the wish list from afar.
What you got?
Well, I'll say wings for sure. Probably pretty big and long, right? Because that area is kind of opened up. Definitely some other point guard options. Because if DJ's around, and we think he's going to be around, but if Dedeon Thomas is around, you got to have some backups. And I was also thinking another big, but I don't know where you stand on bigs because you have a freshman and a JUCO coming in. Maybe Cottrell is around. You're working with Rob Whaley, so am I close to targets?
You are. You're pretty good. I mean, that was a really good job of staying pretty vague, but also, like, because kind of at the end, you know, you said we need players, which is, you nailed it. You nailed it right there. No. But, no, I think you're as close as anyone that I haven't had a conversation with can be. The one name people do forget about is Jacob Benarbi. You know, when you talk about big, you know, anybody that watched practice knows we're gonna put a healthy amount on his plate this year of expectations. But of course, Bear Cherry coming from JUCO, Pop Ngai, local kid, played a little bit, had a little bit of a knee issue in high school, so he didn't play quite as much his last year as he would have wanted. But it's really a weird feeling because we almost were like, well, we've got big people. You know, there's most times in the portal, people are like, we gotta get size. But yeah, I mean, the length is something that I thought really worked out well for us. When you talk about Keelan, of course, and then Caleb, and then Lou. Lou had a great year, and then you kind of rolled that in and combined that with Webb and his ability to shoot it, his leadership, his experience. Those are things we're going to be looking for. We're in a really good spot though, because the returners that we have coming back are experienced. We're going to feel very comfortable putting more on their plate, the guys that played heavy minutes. So we really are looking for those pieces, like you said, a little bit of length, a little bit of shooting, a little bit of ball handling. Those are kind of the three things that the three boxes we want to check. If it can be checked with one person, great. Two people, great. Three people, great. But those are the three things that we're really kind of pinpointing on.
I'd imagine when you're talking to targets, and I talked about wings and, you know, people who play the point guard, how hard is it to convince a player who maybe, you know, in supportal, so they've already played college basketball, they should know this, that, hey, the roster might look like you're not going to be the star or get major time, but you almost want to impress upon them, it's crazy during the season. I mean, you coached a team that had all these different iterations because of injuries. Like, you're going to play. You're going to be in a rotation, and it's not bad to be on a team that's nine deep.
Yeah, I mean, and knock on wood, but, you know, I haven't coached a year yet where everyone's played. So, I mean, it's kind of the nature of it. But, yeah, I mean, everybody in the NIT run, everybody that was eligible to play, played. All three games. So, but yeah, throughout the year, people have ankle sprains. People have, need a knee, and there's opportunity for everyone. But yeah, there's a lot of that. You know, obviously nobody transfers because they want to have less of a role. You know, nobody transfers to take a step back. So finding that balance of, you know, and the coaches, you know, they get mad at me because when we recruit, I sell the basement. You know, I try to sell what your worst, you know, day is going to be like, with an understanding that this is going to be rare. But if this can be your bad day, these are what your good days are going to look like. And if we can kind of find that middle ground, understanding there's going to be times where we're going to butt heads, but we think UNLV offers a great opportunity, the city, the community, the support. We've had a lot of guys that kind of take a look at both sides. Because nothing would be worse for me, that nothing feels worse than a kid that looks at you at the end of the year and just feels that they didn't have the experience they wanted. And to feel responsible for that it's a terrible feeling. So,
obviously, we're not being specific on guys, but when there are guys that go away from Vegas and they're playing college elsewhere and then they enter the portal, those are names that fans get excited. Oh, he's going to come back. Like, are those guys that you guys kind of have your eye on always of, all right, maybe this guy wants to come home at some point?
Are you talking about local kids?
Yeah, local kids who go elsewhere to play college and then they enter the portal. Like, okay, maybe he wants to come home.
Well, and Vegas is, as you guys know, Vegas is a small town.
Yeah.
You know, people talk loud. There's handfuls of people that talk very loudly in Vegas. We don't, like you said, we don't ever talk to them. But you can kind of sense when you're watching games, right? If there's a rumor about a kid wanting to leave and possibly come home or be closer to home, and you watch a game, you can kind of, those wheels can kind of start moving in that, mentally in that direction. But there's 8 million kids in the portal. So you got to find, there's got to be a connection. You don't just bring, it doesn't come out of thin air, whether it's a coach that recruited him before, coming home, being an AAU teammate with someone, you know, there's always kind of that. And that, I think, is when you talk, you know, Steve, like when you talk about the rumors or you talk about this or that or that what's being put out there, those are kind of the things that people just don't necessarily know about, you know, and then that's why it kind of gains traction or gains momentum, because these two kids were at a middle school camp together, you know, but it gains enough. But then we go this direction and everyone's like, what are you doing? Why didn't you get him? They were at a middle school camp together. And it's like, I don't even know. We didn't really know that was that's not really a thing. But it's crazy. It's, you know, I should have wrote it down. I really should have 3 years ago, because when your first five names, a month later, it could be
right
so different.
Well, it's also why I think we don't see you guys rumored for certain players. There's been like five I've seen, but I pointed out to him last week, I'm like, I don't really, doesn't mean you're not involved, I just think you guys like to keep it quieter. Last 90 seconds, so two important things. Jackie Johnson officially in the portal, so Jackie was a big contributor, and you know, there's a little inconsistency, but he helped you guys.
Absolutely love Jackie. Jackie came here, he has done everything that I ever asked him to do to the best of his ability. When we met last week, that as close as I am with Jackie allowed us to kind of just say, if you want a guarantee, if you want to have your last year and be kind of the focal point of every game, I can't promise that. And you know, love him to death. We will want him to be happy, want him to be successful. He deserves it. And so who knows? You know, maybe Jackie is probably the only guy that if he goes in the portal, we could potentially discuss later.
Last one, we mentioned the big look, and you inserted Benarbi in there, which is important. So that would give you four. Technically, Jalen Hill, wing, also a big. Where are we with Jalen? Does it depend on his health? I mean, my sense was that he wanted to come back, just has to get the waiver.
Yeah, we're filing the waiver. He's coming back. So that's another guy. You know, when you talk about DJ coming back, Rob, Jalen, Isaiah, Brooklyn, JB, Benarbi coming, these guys coming back, you got a really good core. But our culture is one right now where guys really love to be at Mendenhall. They love to work, and they play hard. So if you're watching clips, if you're following the Twitter or whatever and all the know-it-alls, if you're watching those clips and those guys don't play hard and they don't look like they're working all the time, then, you know, you can put in the comments that we're probably not interested.
All right, Coach, we appreciate it. Thanks for giving us the time, and nice job. A lot of radio shows. What was the big theme in all the radio shows?
Portal.
Portal, right?
Portal.
So you had a lot of practice Portal before
life.
You came out with that.
Portal life.
It's Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Just getting rolling here at the Final Four, Cofield and Company in Phoenix, as the men's games go down tomorrow. Women's games coming up in just a couple minutes. We got a bunch of folks on from the Westwood One coverage. The radio coverage is tremendous, and one of the folks who you see on TV is a college basketball analyst with CBS, is also doing Westwood One, and it's Clark Kellogg. And we started off a conversation just a couple minutes ago with Clark Kellogg. You know, I always get on Barkley, busting everyone's chops, and kind of a know-it-all and started out the conversation getting a little back information, background information, maybe a snitch here or there with Clark Kellogg, just asking him, does Chuck ever get on you so much that, you know, you get a little bit irked?
No, never. Not at all. Him or Kenny or Ernie. Yeah. None of them. None of them. Whoever I work with, never have I had that reaction.
They don't lay into you very often. Like you can you
they
can
get
feel,
me sometimes. They
you can
me.
Feel the chop busting with Shaq because Shaq does.
Oh
get,
yeah, yeah. That's a different a different animal, different show, different environment. So clearly, there's a little more of that, and that's the NBA. I mean, we're still covering college players, even though they are older now than they've been in the past. But there is an element of discretion that you use when you're talking about college players versus NBA guys that approach.
That's interesting you say that, though, because I've had a lot of people say, you know, NIL, they're getting paid.
Yeah, but I don't agree with that. They're still at a different stage in their development. I understand the business component of college basketball and college football. I mean, those are huge revenue drivers at the collegiate level. But you look at the individual players that make up teams, and they're still, for the most part, in formative years of development. And it's college, even though it might not be in a business sense, but it's still college. And, you know, I've got three adult children that all were college athletes, and I never lose sight of that when I'm commentating games.
Clark Kellogg, so from a media standpoint, Adam and I get it because I work with the UNLV basketball team as a broadcaster. Uh-huh. So and you know, just talking to Mountain West Conference coaches, like, I got to face these people. So, yeah. You know, if you're going to say it, you got to say it to them. Adams, he covers the Raiders, the Vegas Golden Knights, the same thing. Whatever he says, he's going to have to face him eventually. So that brings me to this point. Women's basketball is getting men's coverage and men's treatment. And I've said forever, listen, you want coverage, it's going to come hard at some point. And this has been really the first time where the players have to deal with it. What do we do in that case? Like Angel Reese is kind of a bully and a trash talker, and then she got really upset when it all came rushing back at her.
Well, that's part of developing and understanding that there's two sides to the coin, and that's really neat to see. It's not comfortable, but when the scrutiny comes, there's benefits to the scrutiny, but there's also a responsibility side to the scrutiny, and learning how to navigate that is part of the journey that you go through when you're a highly touted athlete or business person or whoever is going to draw attention for what you're doing in your line of work or your profession, and then people are going to take exception to certain things you might do or say that aren't in line with what's expected. So that's just part of the territory. I wanted to be an NBA player from an early age, 9, 10, 11 years old. I dreamed of being an NBA player. But I also, as I journeyed along that path, I had people tell me and through observation recognize that there's a responsibility that comes with that.
Yeah.
And it's not always going to be fun and pleasant, and it's not always going to be easy. There's going to be some difficulty with it, but that's life. And so I don't have any issue. I mean, I think it's important to understand the responsibility that you have to trying to be your best and then dealing with the media when you are in that space.
So somewhat along the lines about the, you know, the preparation part of it, I see you have notes with you.
Always.
And I think that is unbelievably cool because you don't need to do that. You're so respecting the business. You're so good at what you do. You clearly work hard at it, though. And I think that is something that it comes across in the work for sure.
I appreciate
but
that.
But a lot of other analysts, like, hey, they do a good job. They're fine. But, like, they might just show up and do the job. You clearly take it seriously.
I really do. I mean, that's just part of my training, part of my upbringing, first and foremost, to my late mom and dad, Clark and Maddie, but also extended family. And even as an athlete, in order to try to be the best you can be with the gifts God gives you, you have to put in a level of intentionality and work. And it's no different in this space for me. I want to watch as many games as I can. I take notes on the games that I watch. I refer to my notes. I'm trying to expand my vocabulary all the time. I'm looking for new words to describe. I just think work is part of giving yourself a chance, not guaranteeing, but giving yourself a chance to do your job well. You have to put work in. And I commit to that. That process is important to me, and I don't ever want to shortchange it.
So as we get into this Final Four, is it a coronation? Is it Connecticut's title, and we're here just to watch them win two games?
It's easy to feel that way. I think they're the best team. They've been the most complete team. They've been the most dominant team in a number of years. And so clearly I would give them the respect of being the favorite. But we know that hasn't – Duke came in here in 99, not here in Phoenix, yeah, but to the tournament, a prohibitive favorite. We had UNLV in 90. I mean, there's a handful of teams.
Don't remind us.
Oh, yeah. Well, I thought they were going to do it as well back then. But there have been a handful of teams that you look at and say, this looks like a championship team, and yet they didn't quite get it done. So UConn is clearly in that position. And I think it's going to be really hard for somebody to beat them.
Games are coming up on Saturday on ESPN Las Vegas, courtesy of Westwood One. And Clark Kellogg's on the broadcast with Kugler and Jim Jackson. We appreciate it.
No, thank you, Steve and Adam. Appreciate you guys. Thank you.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Let's mix it up a bit here in Phoenix at Radio Row. Continue on Final Four coverage, predictions, analysis, plus a little bit of Raiders talk, and no better guy to sit down with. He was here just a couple minutes ago. The voice of the Raiders, also Westwood One on Sirius XM as well. Jason Horowitz started off this part of the conversation asking him, or telling him, I believe that Alabama and Purdue can both beat UConn.
I think both of those things could happen.
Okay, I don't know if you're going to No way. They're guaranteed championship.
No. I mean, that's the narrative, right? And I think part of that narrative is because of how dominant they – I mean, and it's all fairness. I mean, they've beaten 10 straight tournament teams by 13 points or more. But then, as Doug pointed out to me last week, well, go back and look at who they played in some of those games, right? They didn't play a Final Four team that you expect to play at the Final Four last year. They played – remember, they were a 4 seed. You had 2 5 seeds and a 9 seed. And they beat San Diego State, who was a good team, really good team, but they were a 5 seed. And this year, again, San Diego State wasn't even as good this year as they were last year, and they were a 5 seed, and they blew them out. And now, Illinois was a really good team. So that was a bit of a surprise. But I did
some 30-0 run on.
No, a 30. I mean, you have a 30-0 run on Wagner. It'd be unbelievable. But to have a 30-0 run on Illinois was incredible. But as I'm blanking on which kid it was from Alabama yesterday because we interviewed so many players. But like one of the kids from Alabama said, he's like, you know, we saw it. We know they had a 30-0 run. He's like, but I can tell you our game plan is not to attack Klingon over and over again. So why would it be? Right? Why would you do that? The same way as like, why would you attack Edie over and over again? Although Klingon's a better rim protector. So I'm with you. Alabama's offense is so good, but UConn's defense is really impressive. Like, this is one of the things I asked Doug last week is why? Why is UConn – why has this UConn team become one of the teams that if they win the Final Four, if they win the national championship again, is going to go down as one of the all-time great runs in tournament history? And I don't think anybody can put their fingers on it, right? Like, Florida had 3 guys who were lottery picks. They all came back from the first one to the second one. And Al Horford's still playing today in the NBA. Joakim Noah, we probably just finished a few years ago, and he became an all-time great defensive player in college, his energy and all those things. And you had Corey Brewer and all those guys. So this UConn team doesn't have that. Their best NBA guy, quote-unquote, is a guy who comes off the bench. Yeah. So I don't know, other than they run great stuff. Cam Spencer makes them a better shooting team. And they just are so good defensively that they're blowing people out.
Last minute with Jason Horowitz, of course, is the voice of the Raiders. All right, draft.
Yeah, it's going
to
happen.
Are they going to spend a boatload to move up into the top four? I don't think they should. If there's another quarterback they like, maybe they get him at 13. Maybe they get him later.
Yeah.
But I don't trade away draft assets.
So my philosophy on the draft, and this is going to be my 11th year as the host of the draft for Sirius XM, so picks 1 through Brock Purdy, right, Mr. Irrelevant. My philosophy on the draft has never changed. It is, do whatever you want to get the player that is great. If the player is great, nobody will ever care what you gave up. They only care if he's not good. And so, right? I mean, that, and so obviously you have to believe that. If, let's say they're trading up for Jaden Daniels, or let's say it's Drake May, or whoever they're trading up for, right? If that's what they do, and the guy becomes a 12-year starter, and is, you know, Justin Herbert, obviously, like, win more than Justin Herbert, but is, like, that good of a player, you do not care what you gave up because you won't remember what you gave up. But and by the way, my philosophy goes the other way, too, which is, you know, like Dwight Freeney is the example I always come up with because I was a freshman at Syracuse his senior year, and the draft was, oh, he's too short, he's too small, he'll never be good. Colts took him at 11, and everybody said that was too high. Well, what's Dwight Freeney? A Hall of Famer. Because who cares about his arm size? And it's the same thing. I like when people are like, well, you know, 13's too high to draft Michael Penix, although maybe he's going up the boards now. Or 10's too high to draft a great guard because who drafts a guard at 10? If the guy is that good, who cares if you draft him at 10 or 26? unless, because you don't know that you're going to get them at 26, and you don't ever know the capital that you're going to get and what you're going to turn that into. You're pointing at him. Why are you pointing?
Well, because we got to wrap it up in 30 seconds.
Who says? These guys, you guys, I love these guys.
They're militant. I'm afraid of them. They're the future of the biz. I might need jobs from them in five years.
100%.
Real quick, because you're shaking your head.
You don't believe the same philosophy?
Because he believes in certain draft prices.
Part of it is like you can't draft guys. A quarterback's different. But you can't, like, Chargers can't take Brock Bowers at five, even if he's a Hall of Famer.
Why?
Because you lose the value.
What's the difference? No, let me ask you.
Lose the value on the fifth year option.
Serious question. Ooh, okay. What is? Let's say they trade down to 10.
Yeah.
Okay. Because people pick Brock Bowers at 10. They say Brock Bowers is going to go 10 to the Jets, right? So let's say they pick him at 10. If Brock Bowers is Antonio Gates, why do you care if it's 5 or 10?
It's because the value on a first round pick and the fifth year option, it's so great when you have a premium position. Because of how much cheaper it is that fifth year that you're wasting it if you take eight.
Are you really wasting it though?
You are,
because the game is about wins and losses.
A tight end is not affecting wins and losses that much.
You tell me Antonio Gates didn't affect wins and losses. Hold on. I just finished with Kansas City. Hold on. I just finished doing Kansas City Radio. Are we telling me that Travis Kelce is not affecting wins and losses?
Not as much as Pat Mahomes.
What he does.
Cofield, what do you say?
That's what he does.
What do you say to that?
If you look,
no, I agree. Of course, not as much.
Look, a tight end.
Is it okay for me to say I'm not a betting guy? As a Vegas guy, is it okay? Yeah. I mean, I'm not allowed to bet on the NFL anyway. But
like, if you announce even the best tight end in the league, if you announce he's out, it's not even moving the line a half point.
No, I get that. But what I'm saying to you is that when it comes to the draft, in the first round, draft picks are 50-50.
Yeah.
Quarterbacks are 50-50.
Well,
offensive linemen are 50.
Whatever.
Well, but go 1 through 32, 50-50 about whether they're starters for 10 years, 50-50 about whether they're pro bowlers, right? That's what it is. If the guy you're taking, you are, because you can never be positive, but if you are right, then who, I get what you're saying about the thought process about the cap and all that stuff. But if the guy is that good, and he's the best at his position by a far amount, why would you take the third or fourth best guy because of your position? And by the way, I'm also a believer that you draft best player regardless of position.
Oh, no.
I believe that, too.
Oh, no.
Because you can't stack enough good players.
Oh, no.
That's it. This is our show right
if
here.
If Byron Murphy is the best player when they're ready to take, for number three.
Johnny Newton.
Oh, boy.
Johnny Newton is the best player.
You guys need to go argue off to the side. But Jason's got another spot to do.
Do
we
I?
Appreciate it. Yeah, you do. You have plenty of them. Come on now. You know you have responsibilities. Thank you. There he is, Jason Horowitz. We were getting the closeouts on. The folks setting up interviews for us, very organized here, too. They do a really good job. But the interns running the guest around are students at ASU in their Cronkite school, media school, J school?
Yeah.
And they're very militant. They mean business. So they gave us the rap sign on Horowitz. And frankly, I didn't want you guys to argue for another 10 minutes because you were not going to back down.
No.
I think Jason's, I don't want to rip what he does on SiriusXM. It's good, but I think he sometimes can steamroll some people over there. It's not going to happen on Draft Philosophy with you.
No.
But he's also breaking his brain.
He's not going to break down either. He's not going to
break down. Well, I like that he was like, he brings up Travis Kelce. Then you immediately have a response, and then he's like, what do you think, Cofield? I'm like, I'm out. You guys go at it.
I'm very staunch in my ways, for sure.
You should be.
Yeah.
I'm kind of on your side. I mean, I'm on your side. You know what? I don't care if Brock Bowers turns out to be the next Kelce. There is the draft game. He kept saying, like, no one will care if someone's great. We will. We'll remember it.
Of course. Especially if it's a situation where you could have got somebody later.
What if you can flip the, to your point, what if you can flip, you're the Chargers, you want Bowers, but he's really not going to go until the mid-teens.
Yeah.
And then you get a second-round pick, and that second-round pick turns into a player.
Yeah, and you never know because you never know who they would have taken or how the draft would have fallen differently and all those things. But if the crazy part that people can't really comprehend, and I understand that it's tough. Like, if, let's say, whatever the greatest player is, let's just say Patrick Mahomes, and I know he fell down the draft, but if you are a team that had the first pick in that draft and you knew there was no chance he was going to get picked till 10,
it's a bad pick to pick him at number one. And I know that blows people's mind. But that means you should have traded down to 9 and taken him at 9.
Man.
That is absolute fact.
But who knows that? Tough. Oh, you're making me. I'll be the voice for the fan here. Who knows that for sure?
It's obviously hypothetical. But what I'm saying is, if there was no chance he was going to go till 10, and you draft him 1, it's a bad pick, even if he's the greatest player of all time. And again, you don't know that. That's the game of the draft. You have to play that, you know, that balancing game of, all right, we need to go as far back as we possibly can and still get the player that we want, not knowing exactly what teams are going to do. But if there was no chance that a guy was going to go until 10 and you picked him 1, it's a bad pick no matter how good he is.
Can you imagine? And again, you don't know what would have happened if they acquire another pick. Can you imagine how many times the John Gruden, Mike Mayock Raiders, if they had found some value beneath and they were so stuck on getting certain guys, they pissed away so much draft value and the guys didn't turn out to be good.
Yeah, both.
It's like, yeah, no, we want Clelin Ferrell right now. Yeah, he doesn't turn out and you did it at 4.
Yeah, and that is the part of the draft that's very tough.
Al Leatherwood, we're getting him at 17. Yeah, you could have got him at 35.
Yeah.
He didn't turn out to be good.
Probably 55.
But you know what I'm saying? Maybe the other pick turns out to be good.
Yeah.
The extra pick.
That's what you
want as many picks as possible. You want to nail players, but you also want as much draft capital as possible.
Right.
That, you know, it reduces the impact of a terrible mistake.
And no matter how many hypotheticals you want to have or, you know, going back and forth about value and all those things, which I love and I know a lot of people hate because it is hypothetical, the bottom line is you can't get bad value and have bad players. You can't have both, which is what the Raiders have had at times through their drafts and some other teams have had as well, and that's why they're not in the playoffs every year.
So we're working on a bunch of stories. We're following very closely the path of former 13-day head coach at UNLV, Chris Beard, and the Arkansas situation, what that can mean for Jerome Tang at Kansas State. There's a family in town that has ties to Kansas State, so there's some dominoes there. We're following some Dedon Thomas stuff. We'll recap a lot of the Kevin Kruger conversation we had a little bit earlier in the hour. The 4 o'clock hour is on the way. We'll bring in Reno. And remember, we are stationed down at our Friday home. Greg Salerno's on the scene. Go say hi to him. Go hang out. Golden Circle Sportsbook and Bar, 50-plus TVs with the betting windows there, the kiosk, a great menu to check out the Women's Final Four, which is going to tip off here in less than 10.